It's The Takeaway. Todd Zwillick with you today. We have a look now at life under the Islamic State, or Daesh, through the eyes of a person who's living there.
It's Friday. This is the day we used to gather in the street after prayers and have long chats. But not anymore. Anyone gathering in public without permission now risks being accused of plotting against Daesh.
International media is kept out of ISIS-controlled areas, of course, and that means that most of the coverage is from far away. Troop movements, battles, videos of atrocities that are posted on YouTube. But millions of regular people live in those towns and villages under ISIS control, and their lives continue pressed between the draconian Sharia law of a brutal terrorist regime and the destructive armies on the other side of wars in Syria and in Iraq. One way to bridge the gap between headlines and real life is simply to let those people speak for themselves, to tell their own story. That's the goal of a new series, Life Inside Islamic State Diaries. It's a first-person account of an activist living in Raqqa, Syria, the capital of the Islamic State. Mike Thompson is BBC Foreign Affairs correspondent and the creator of the series, and his story begins back in January of 2014 when ISIS first took control in Raqqa.
Well, it all started about, over a year ago, in fact. I've been getting interviews out of various parts of Syria to find out from people on the ground what's happening there. And, of course, one place where that has been hardest has been in Raqqa, because it is the capital of their so-called caliphate, and it's a place where they're extremely sensitive to criticism or anyone speaking to the Western media. And I began by speaking to a group called Raqqa is Being Slaughtered Silently. But after a while, through them, I got put through to this other group called Al-Shakira 24, and trust built up. And then it was about 4 months ago now that I proposed to them that perhaps a better way of getting more detailed personal knowledge of what's happening on the ground in Raqqa is for one of them to write it, and with plenty of time. It would enable them, if it's part of a series, to say a lot more, and they could send text out, which in this case was encrypted and sent to a third country, which would lessen the risk of their voices identifying them. So it would also give us a fuller picture, too, of life there.
And that first-person account, I think, is so important to the impact of what you're doing here. Let's listen to another clip from the series. This is the first time, in fact, that ISIS rolled into Raqqa. Listen.
A few weeks later, I was working in the shop when I heard gunfire and the boom of heavy weapons outside. Everyone was running on the street. My friend gripped my arm and said, Daesh had taken over the city.
Got some sound production there, of course, but it's harrowing to hear it in the first person voice of your subject.
It is very much so. It's one of those things when journalists like ourselves are reporting what's happening in places like Syria, so often we dwell on the military or the political, the wider overview. But it's when you look at what ISIS is doing to people on the ground, it gets you to realize the effect all this has. And we get an insight from talking to this guy in Raqqa of how the fear and brutality created by ISIS permeates virtually every area of life, and how it affects not just communities, but how it affects family life, how it affects individuals.
Then my mobile rang. It was my mother. She asked me to buy some groceries for the family, but I can't afford much these days. On the way back, I thought up lots of excuses to explain why I'd returned with so little food. But I didn't need to. Like most parents here, my mother was just delighted that I hadn't been arrested or killed and was safely home again.
And one of the biggest compliments that was paid to me about the series was one listener who said, it seems to eat up all that distance in geography, race, religion, anything else. This guy felt like he could be my brother. And that, of course, is always the aim, to try and really bring that across.
Well, you talk about that reality. For those of us who've spent a lot of time trying to follow the ISIS invasion and the rise of ISIS on television or on the radio, it doesn't quite come close in many instances, the horror, to the types of stories we're hearing here. I want to set up another clip that we chose, Mike Thompson, and then have you explain it.
A crowd had gathered around a deep hole. Crouched inside it was a woman. I asked people who she was and what she was doing there. Before I got an answer, a large masked man began reading. This woman was adulteress, and her punishment is to be stoned to death. His words were interrupted by the noise of warplanes overhead. A local vendor shouted, "Hide! Hide!" There were big explosions and body parts everywhere. Most of them belonged to civilians. It was a Russian airstrike, supposedly targeting terrorists. Isn't the terrorism we suffered on the ground enough? Now you bring it from the skies as well.
Mike Thompson, all I can say is that it's one horror replaced by another in that scene.
It certainly is. That was the scene depicting a woman who was in a hole in the ground and people were gathering around and about to stone her to death for adultery. And it seems sort of ironically that the airstrike seemed to have saved her from that at the time. Whether she survived after that is a different matter. But our diarist talks at one point about how he was told by a friend to take a different way home that night after working in his shop. And he said he didn't tell me why I should do that. And in the end, curiosity got the better of me and I went my normal route home and found this guy I knew whose head had been cut off and his body stuck in front of his parents' house. And there are also apparently severed heads placed on lampposts, fence posts, around Raqqa sometimes, which are there obviously to dissuade anyone from in any way not cooperating with them.
Have you been able to get word back to your diarist that his story, their story, is getting out to the world now?
Yes, we have told them what is happening, although I haven't been able to speak to him for quite a few days now, which isn't unusual in that at various points in trying to get this diary series together, sometimes it could be a week or 10 days before we can make any contact at all with the group. And also, we didn't want to send them, particularly the animated diaries that you've been playing clips of, because there's a lot of megabytage there. And of course, were they caught in possession of these things, I dread to think what would happen. But we have told them the series is going ahead, and they are delighted that it is.
They should be delighted. And still, Mike Thompson, I have a feeling of dread as I leave you from this conversation that there's a chance your diarist may not survive. That's the case for everybody in Raqqa.
That is always a constant concern. And we went right through the scripts of the diaries, taking out anything he'd written, and there were quite a few things that we felt could lead to a sort of jigsaw identification of him or his family or those that are in his activist group. Because always it's the thought of, one, that he may just get caught anyway, but two, that we want to help get the word out about what is happening there, because it is so hard to do that and it's so valuable to do that. But at the same time, what we don't want is in any way to endanger his life any more than it's endangered already.
Mike Thompson is BBC Foreign Affairs correspondent. He's the creator of Life Inside Islamic State Diaries, chronicling the daily life of an activist in Raqqa through radio broadcasts and animated features. Mike Thompson, thank you so much.
Thank you.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.